Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Showtime. How y'all feel? T.T. and y'all. Motivated, 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 motivated.
All I want to know if you got your popcorn ready.
On three. One, two, three.
This is Wichita's Sports Daily with Bruce Hurdle and Shane Dennis on Sports Radio KFH, 1240 AM, 97.5 FM.
Welcome back to Sports Daily, hour one in the books. Brian Haney on the clock as KU lost at number 9 West Virginia in Morgantown, 38-22. So now the Jayhawks have lost 3 in a row after winning 2 straight. They go into the bye week and get ready for a trip to Lubbock to take on Texas Tech. That game on Saturday was started by Carter Stanley, and then after 4 passes, he was replaced by Peyton Bender, who actually turned in a pretty decent performance, 16 of 25 for 191 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. They did turn Will Greer over 4 times, including 3 times in the red zone in the very first half, to keep that game a 21-7 contest at the half. They got to within 21-14 in the third quarter. Couldn't get any closer, though, and the final was 38-22. We've got Brian now on the Tad's Locker Room hotline. We're just kind of chronicling that 38-22 defeat in Morgantown. Brian, your assessment of the Mountaineers didn't look certainly like their best effort. It depends on your view on how much Kansas had to do with it. They did rack up some sacks and some turnovers, which we thought was absolutely the tonic to stay close, and that's exactly what KU did. Their defense kind of stood up, especially in the red zone.
Yeah, they really did. And, you know, that's something going back to our initial conversations in mid-August that we said all along might be the case with this Kansas defense in 2018. They are, in my estimation, still an upper half of the Big 12 Conference caliber defense when they play like that. And when you play like that, you're going to have a chance to compete every single week and have a chance to win some games you're not supposed to. And clearly going up there as heavy, heavy underdogs at number 8 West Virginia, nobody expected Kansas to be within striking distance. Nobody thought Kansas would be lining up to field a punt on the 38-yard line of West Virginia halfway through the fourth quarter, down just 2 scores with a chance to cut that deficit in half and really put a scare into these guys. And as the rest of the story goes, you know, they fumbled that punt on special teams and the defense had to come right back out on the field. And, you know, those last 2 scores, that was a gassed defense that had been leaving it all out on the line all day long. And, you know, the final points allowed balloons a little bit to 38 when really they played that game in the 20s. And anytime you go out and you have a total of 10 tackles for loss, you get 5 sacks, you get 4 takeaways, 3 interceptions in one half of a Heisman Trophy quarterback candidate that had 3 picks all year, 3 interceptions in the red zone, in the end zone, from a guy that hadn't thrown an INT in the red zone all season, and 65 pass attempts coming in consecutively without a mistake on that portion of the field. They were 17 for 17 prior to his first pick all season long in scoring in the red zone. And 85% of the time when they scored in the red zone on those 17 tries, it had been a touchdown. And so Kansas 3 times over turns them over at the goal line or in the end zone. That was huge. And obviously, you know, you can't count on those plays every day, but it was great to see Kansas get the takeaways that they did and back it up against not just a league opponent, but maybe the best offense they'll see in terms of offensive aerial firepower. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll probably see a more complete offense with Oklahoma later in the year, but in terms of the receivers and the depth of breadth of receiver talent they can run at you, that's about as tough as it's going to get. And we saw Kansas really rise up on a day when they were without their 2 starting safeties. So for those that kind of poo-pooed on, you know, the stats that they posted in non-con and said, hey, you know, it's varying competition in September. Everybody plays different non-conference opponents. And I get that. Absolutely. That's true. But, you know, if you didn't want to put too much stock in the leading the nation in the turnover margin category based on who they played against, well, they just went out and did it at West Virginia in terms of the takeaway.
You can say it. So, Dana Holgorsen said it, and they picked off his quarterback three times and turned him over another time. You can say it. I'll say it for you.
Yeah, man. You know, those are the positives. The negatives is, include that, you know, the offense went right back to getting stuck in the mud again. And the quarterback play is continuing to be a week-to-week, up-and-down, Jekyll and Hyde type situation. And you really hope you can start to get some continuity, consistency, and momentum at that spot. Because just when we thought things were kind of trending upward with the 28 points versus Oklahoma State and the 247 passing yards with three scores out of Carter Stanley, then you have an inconsistent performance. And some of those plays weren't on him. You know, one of the picks was a tip ball, obviously, and the exchange that was botched when it was a potential play action. It's a read play, read option, where you're either going to pull it and keep it yourself or you're going to hand it off to Puka. And Puka got his big hands on the ball, and ultimately there was, you know, a kink in the system there, and ultimately they turn it over. There were things that clearly Carter could have done better, and yet I don't think his performance was as bad as it initially appeared. And then they went to Peyton Bender after that. And so, you know, Kansas has got to figure something out during the bye week at that spot. I won't sugarcoat it. It's got to get better in your last 6 weeks if this team is going to realize its optimal potential. That performance on Saturday defensively is, you know, about as good as you can hope to have against a top 15 offense and a top 10 team in their house. Yeah. That's exactly what we're talking about in saying that the defense will play well enough to keep you in a game. But at some point, the other two units have to step up and be a difference maker, and especially if you're going to win on the road in this league. So, you know, to see that, I thought was a great, great bit of progress. And I was tweeting on social media, man, I'm so proud of these guys and the effort and the progress they made defensively. But as you well know, that's just one of three units. Mm-hmm. And if the other two aren't raising the bar as well, and in this case on special teams with the muffed punt, they're costing you, then obviously you're not going to win in this league when you're operating against so many big boys, top 25 teams, Heisman Trophy quarterbacks, All-American receivers. West Virginia had all of that. Mm-hmm. And yet you were still right there because of the Herculean effort out of one unit. If you can get those other two units going on the same day, then look out. Kansas really could pull a big upset like that. But right now what we've seen, Shane, is an every other week type thing, because I'm not going to make it all about indicting the offense. The previous week it was the defense that got torched over the top and gave up 48 points. So you know, you want to see those two start to sync up a little bit better on the same week.
Brian, I don't know, I've been doing this for a lot of years because I'm old, and I'm hard pressed to think back when the two schools in the state of Kansas, and there's been some thin years, but the two schools in the state of Kansas have had more issues at quarterback. What the old adage is, when you've got two quarterbacks, you don't really have one. Well, can we expand that to when you have five quarterbacks, you don't really have one? I see such incredible similarities between what's going on at Kansas and really down the road at Kansas State. It's just really strange that nobody seems to have a quarterback that they have a lot of faith and trust in at this point.
Yeah, I think it's a great observation. And Bruce, you know, at some schools, having the two quarterbacks where one's a change of pace guy clearly works, and it's kind of the in vogue thing now that a lot of schools are going to, in part because they want to keep guys happy and keep them on campus. Mm-hmm. We've gotten this trend of transferring as soon as you lose out on the top of the depth chart starting job thing that led to a lot of coaches waiting until the very last minute to announce their quarterback starters so that you didn't have a lot of ample time for the runner-up in the competition to transfer. And then after that, you started to see more and more coaches say, okay, well, we're going to play a two-quarterback system, and we're going to call it a change-of-pace guy. But in a lot of cases, they're really just trying to keep both guys on campus because it's a sport of attrition, and eventually an injury is going to happen, and you're going to be glad you had that number two. Just look at the situation that Clemson and Nebraska got themselves in as soon as the other guy announced he was going to transfer, and then the main guy gets hurt. So you know, it's one of those deals where I think it's kind of a product of the times in college football. All these kids think that they're QB1. All these kids think, well, you know what? If you're not going to start me, I'm going to go somewhere else. And so you start to see more and more programs catering to that. And I'm not saying that's fully the case in Kansas, but I think it factors in a little bit. I do think David Beatty genuinely wants to have, you know, the type of quarterback depth where he can keep the opponent guessing, keep them on their heels, that kind of thing. And we talked about this at the start of the season when I referenced what Doug Meacham did at Houston when he had a bona fide starter, but then a change of pace quarterback that would come in every fourth or fifth series. And if he got the hot hand, they might stick with him. But they did that to give the defense more to prepare for. And at some schools it works, guys. At other schools, you know, you kind of start to wonder because you'd love to have more momentum, more rhythm, and just consistency, continuity back there. And I'm not saying that's the case at Kansas, but really you'd love to see one guy get hot, take it, and run with it. And hopefully that'll happen in the second half of the year because there are situations you can point to around the country where when you're jockeying back and forth too much, you never get any rhythm established, and everybody's constantly looking over their shoulder, wondering how short the leash is, and you wind up in the scenario you just said of if you got two, you got none. So I think, yeah, it's a long answer and a lot to say that it's kind of a sign of the times, but, man, I wish the current sign of the times was that we had a bona fide stud at that position because the last time we had one, this program won 20 games in two seasons, and we've been searching for the next Todd Reesing ever since.
Talking to Brian Haney, play-by-play voice of the Kansas Jayhawks. KU lost to West Virginia 38-22 last Saturday. Get the week off to get ready for Texas Tech. Now, let's go to the good side, and that is the gash plays against West Virginia. This is a team in the Mountaineers that routinely had plays of 40, 50, 60, and more yards through the pass game all season long going into this one. Their longest one Saturday was 39. And in the college game with Will Grier, that's saying something. On the other side, even though Carter Stanley got the start and got a quick hook, Peyton Bender had passes of 35, 26, 20, 18, 18, and 13, and completed one over 30 yards when all 11 dropped into pass coverage for West Virginia. So I know it's a stair step and incremental improvement, but the defense keeping all those big play West Virginia guys in front of them and the offense making some strides in the pass game had to be a welcome sight for KU fans.
Yeah, I think it really was. I think a lot of that is scheme that you credit Clint Bowen on and his game plan coming in. And then, you know, we got better personnel. We were able to heat up Will Grier a little bit. We were able to be disruptive in their offensive backfield with the 10 tackles for loss. This was a team that entered the game leading the conference and top three in the nation in limiting tackles for loss. And Kansas was back there in their offensive backfield seemingly every other play. So, you know, kudos to Daniel Wise, who had a huge day with 3.5 TFLs. Kudos to some of these young Russians I've been telling you about, like Azur Kamara, that are starting to make more and more plays week in and week out. It's exciting to see, you know, them blossom. But I thought Coach Bowen had a great scheme heading into it as well. And there won't be a ton of teams this year that frustrate Will Grier as much as Kansas did. And, you know, he went from being the number three Heisman Trophy candidate to, you know, barely hanging on in some of the top 10 rankings of that poll when you have that bad of a game at home, albeit still a win. It's not like he lost like Kyler Murray, but he struggled through that one. And I credit the Kansas defense for doing that. So definite progress, and I appreciate you pointing that out, Shane. Now we just got to turn progress into a win because I know that's what everybody really wants to see.
Where do you see it right now, Brian? I mean, is it at a mid-level point? I guess we're at a mid-level point of the season. Maybe that would be appropriate. It could go one way or the other. How do we measure progress at this particular point moving forward the rest of the season?
Well, honestly, guys, I think in year four, it has to come in the form of a win. You got to find a way to win one you're not supposed to. And that's not asking much when you got six games left, just say win one. But I mean that in that, you know, you can be competitive like they were last week, and that was a great step forward, and we all felt great about it because when you show up and everybody's expecting it to be a blowout track meet, and then you've legitimately struck fear in the opponent fan base, you know, with 7 minutes to go in the game and you're still hanging around, that does feel like a small victory. But obviously, more victories, you know, don't keep programs trending the right direction and keep staff together and all of that. It's got to start changing in the win column. And so, you know, if you ask me about these last 6 weeks, obviously you want to compete in every single game and have a chance to win every single game. But realistically, they need to win one or two, too. You know, they didn't sign up to peak in September and then go 0-9 in the league. No matter how good this league is, and we've talked about it repeatedly on these reports about how all nine other teams were projected at least 6 wins by the odds makers, meaning everybody amongst your Big 12 brethren are projected bowl teams. So if KU went 0-9 in the league, you'd understand based on, you know, what these other teams are made of. But quite frankly, you know, you got to find a way to win one of these. And I think there's several wheelhouse type games still to come. And maybe it's not truly in their wheelhouse, but doable games, you know, that they're within reach, especially if you play as well as they did defensively the other day. But, you know, to answer your question bluntly and straight up, that they got to find a way to win one or two in the last 6 weeks, because I'm not sure, you know, just playing it close in year four will be deemed enough progress. You know, if ultimately they finish 2-10, but had some hard-fought battles. We saw the hard-fought battles, you know, start to turn in the first or second season of the Mark Mangino era. And obviously the undertaking that David Beatty took on is so much tougher for so many reasons. You know all about the scholarship detriments that they were facing. You probably need to hear more about the schedule that they've been up against compared to what it used to be when Mangino first took over, and you had a Big 12 North and a Big 12 South, and you had 4 non-conference games as opposed to having 75% of your schedule be against Big 12 teams. And look at the state of the Big 12 now versus then. I just told you, you know, to start the year, they were all projected bowl teams. Back then, you had 3 or 4 teams that you could line up across from and feel like you could beat them on any given Saturday. So it's a different type of time and a different challenge. And for all these reasons, it's been a much tougher row to hoe for this staff. But I think that they would tell you, not me, that they got to find a way to win one or two in these last 6 weeks, especially when you have a team with this many seniors, 25 of them, who've been busting their tails and pouring out their blood, sweat, and tears to not just be competitive, but to be the team that turned the corner and got Kansas back in the win column. And, you know, the first step toward that was back in week two when they got that awful road losing skid taken care of. Well, now they're trying to win their first conference road game in 10 years, going back to 2008. They're trying to do that. Maybe we'll get to see that at some point this year. But to have a chance to win multiple league games in the last 6 weeks, that to me would feel like real progress. That would feel like a very successful season if they could win 2 in their last 6 and finish at 4-8. Considering where you started the year and considering some of the adversity they've been through, that to me, Bruce, would be progress. Whether or not we see it remains to be seen. But you know what? I wouldn't count these kids out yet, because the fight I saw in them on Saturday up at Morgantown, especially on that defensive side of the ball, shows me that at least right now, you know, they're absolutely busting their tails, feeling like they can still achieve a lot of their dreams. And let's get behind them and support them to the finish line, because regardless of what you feel about whether or not there's been enough progress to this point, I see these kids every day. I know how they're working, how hard they're working, and how much they're giving. And they could use that 12th man when we come back home and have TCU come in at the end of the month. That, to me, is one of your top three most winnable remaining games. So I hope we'll get to see that type of fan support come late October.
10 days from now on KFH, Kansas at Texas Tech. I wanted to ask you about the Red Raiders, but we'll do it a week from now, heading into that game down in Lubbock, and a little bit of a homecoming for you. KU and Texas Tech coming up on the 20th. Thanks again for joining us, Brian. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Yeah, sorry I got too long-winded there on the soapbox. I just want folks to stay on board with these guys because they're fighting hard. But at the same time, be realistic. We're not going to preach sunshine and rainbows if we're not winning games. But I do see progress, and I see the effort, and so I hope the fans will recognize that too. But thanks for the platform, fellas, and thanks to the Mattress Hub for sponsoring these reports each and every Wednesday here on Wichita's home for Jayhawk football, KFH. Really appreciate you guys, and make sure you check out themattresshub.com for all their specials going on right now in October.
Thank you, Brian. Have a good
week. Thanks,
Brian. You too. See you, fellas.
All right. And by the way, I was the only one to take KU in our State Farm picks. I thought it'd be a backdoor cover.
Congratulations.
They never needed it. They were
you're right. You're right, and I congratulate you. Here's the bottom line on that game, and I think that I don't know. Was that as much indifference from West Virginia as it was Kansas doing something? Come on.
Three interceptions in the red zone? That's not a difference.
Well, I mean, the one interception
That's on Will Greer if he wants to sleepwalk through a
Will
football
Greer.
Game. You can paint it that way if you want, but, you know, on one hand,
that
could have been 58-20, but you know what?
You're
on the other,
right, it could
On
have
the
been.
Other hand, it could have been 28-28, too, because a couple of those picks, the guy from KU was one shoestring away from taking it all the way back to the house. So,
and I used the wrong term. It wasn't indifference. It was just a lack. I thought it was a real lack of focus. And I thought West Virginia, frankly, Shane, I think they hurt their own cause in that game. They didn't look the part at all in that football game. Just didn't.
Early kick, 28.5-point favorite. It's entirely possible when that happens. Mm-hmm. But once you get in the red zone, look, if he was if he was dropping snaps and tripping over his linemen and fumbling exchanges, that's one thing. But once they got in the red zone where he was it was lethal, I'm gonna give it to Kansas' secondary. One interception in the red zone is awesome for a game. They did it three times in one half.
Yep.
All right, so coming up on Friday, it'll be Todd Benway for State Farm. And it was ugly for you and State Farm yet again. You guys went 2-6.
Yeah, I know. It's brutal.
Over the weekend. So now
more of the same.
I have a 5-game lead over State Farm and an 8-game cushion over you right now. And we're still kind of deciding beyond 5 games. And there's got to be some props in there with that Chiefs and Patriots game because that's going to be a barn burner on Sunday night. So.
And those are fun anyway.
We'll reveal all the State Farm picks for Friday tomorrow. And when we come back on the other side of the break, we'll talk more about the Big 12 and college football landscape overall with Stephen Lassen from Athlon Sports, friend of the show and college football insider. Will join me and Bruce when we come back on Sports Daily.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.